Gentlemen, honourable members, welcome to all of you. Purpose of this morning's meeting is to deliberate on the Sexual Offences Act. When we're done with that, move on to Judicial Matters Amendment Bill. You've all received the 15 submissions that we received. And I had really hoped that in the process of emailing these to all of you, it would assist us in agreeing that we would finalize the amendment bill this morning. So I'm essentially asking you, can we proceed? Do you wish to comment on the submissions? Time is of the essence, of course. Dean Smuts.
Chair, firstly, I think that I do, and I'm sure we all do, welcome the fact that people have risen to this challenge so handsomely. It's wonderful to see the number of submissions, their quality, and the kind of NGOs and bodies that have participated. I have only two conclusions arising from them, but I see there's a, which I will share with you in a second, I see there's a new document, the Memorandum of Advice, which we've not had a chance to peruse. Perhaps you will address us on that. As to the submissions, I found convincing the argument that we should drop 56A2 on the argument that a component or an element of a crime cannot also be an aggravating consideration for the purposes of sentence. I found that persuasive, but I would therefore welcome any comments or argument to the contrary. So 99% of the submissions agree with our approach on how to handle with this, which gives one confidence that we've taken the right approach. And I think there was only the one fresh suggestion that we should insert reference to Section 276 of the CPA into our 56A. I think that may have come from the NPA, and I thought that was worth considering. But in essence, from my side, just a matter of dropping 56A2, and I think we have support for our approach on the bill.
Ms. Schaefer?
Mr. Chair, yes, I agree with that, 56A2. Just some comments on, it seems that there's a bit of confusion regarding some of these provisions, particularly the one about Section 11, sexual procuring sexual services for. We aren't changing anything there, we're just clarifying what the intention originally was. So I don't think we can really entertain those at this point. As they point out, there is a submission coming from the Law Reform Commission. Some of them seem to point out that it's not going to assist in that it won't be retrospective, but we are well aware of that in any event. I mean, what we're saying is that it's clarifying the existing situation anyhow. So that, I think, is fine. I do think that it is a concern that the Forms and Publication Act apparently has a similar provision, and I do think we should look at that as a separate process. Not, we can't incorporate it now, but I think we should look at that urgently as well, as well as perhaps the suggestion from the NPA regarding the Criminal Procedure Act. But I don't think we should rush into doing anything without proper investigation. The other issue was, my main concern was whether this is specific enough, the penalty. And it does appear, even from UCT submission, which, you know, they all are qualified lawyers, and they seem to think that it's okay. There was no one who seemed to think that it wasn't satisfactory. So I think on that basis we can proceed and perhaps remove 56-2A.
Okay. Mr. Swart?
Yes, Chair, thank you. My submissions are broadly in line with what my colleagues have said. that it appears from the written submissions that there is broad support for the approach we've adopted, which is important. We also note that leave to appeal has now been granted. That's an important point. So it's a parallel process, but I think it will be important for the purposes of the court hearing that there is already this legislation that would have been passed. I think that will have an impact as well. Clearly, the fact that it is not retrospective is the main concern, and that is why the appeal route is being followed. We trust that that would then clarify the issues, and we hope at the end of the day that that full bench judgment is set aside, which will then deal with the legal uncertainty. So I think, Chair, from our side, it looks like there's very broad agreement with our approach as a committee. Thank you, Chair.
Ms. Schaefer, and then Mr. Jeffrey.
Thanks. Just one other thing that was raised by, I think, Mr. King, was that he seemed to think that it might jeopardize the appeal if we now, we're almost admitting, and I think we've covered that, and I don't think it is, because effectively what we're doing is clarifying what our intention was. So we agreed on that. Okay.
Mr. Jeffrey.
Chair, thanks. Yeah, I mean, I think this general agreement, I think starting with 56A2, which probably generated the most debate, I'm in agreement that let's leave that where it was in 56, and leave it out from the sentencing section.
Okay.
Because that sort of seemed to have generated the most debate. The NPA submission is actually, as I understood it, to rather amend Section 276 of the Criminal Procedure Act.
Yes.
Now, I think the difficulty with that, to cover basically any other crime or any other matter that doesn't have a penalty. You know, that might be good, but my difficulty is that correcting gaps in legislation is not like putting polyfiller on a crack in a wall. And I just think we are better off. You know, we don't know what the consequences of that would be. We haven't really looked at it. So I think we're better off at this stage amending the Sexual Offences Act, and we can maybe raise in the report you know, other crimes need to be looked at. There may be other gaps. We can raise that in the report. But I wouldn't be in favour of the NPA's approach. I see there are people from the NPA. I don't know if they're going to, if they want to speak to us on that submission. Then the other was that Mr. Huyn from the State Law Advisors had wanted reference to sort of more tighter reference to sentencing, I mean to a sentence of imprisonment and or fine. I don't know if that's necessary, but maybe Singh is here, he could also address us on that point. Then there was the other issue of whether this broad power to the courts was sufficient or whether there needed to be more detail given. And I think the general view is that as a stopgap measure, the general power to the courts is the best short-term method, but in the longer term, there should be more detail given to each offence. And I think there's general agreement on that. My only problem, Chair, is a document we've just received at this meeting, which is the memorandum of advice, and I don't know if somebody can take us through that. Because that's SC and two counsel, and they are basically, if one looks at the conclusion at the end, saying the proposed draft does not address the High Court's concerns, although they do say that the wording of the section is not objectionable, and they want the part two of Schedule 2 to the Criminal Law Amendment. And I think provide for specific, my understanding is they want specific punishment for specific crimes, which we've said we can't do urgently because we will. I mean, if you remember the proposal we got from the drafters initially was those two options: a schedule with each crime listed, and the difficulty of being able to do that urgently versus this general provision. The only other thing, Chair, is the, I think it's the Women's Legal Centre submission, which was just to make provision for a cross-reference, impose a sentence, and they want, as provided for in Section 276 of the Criminal Procedure Act, as amended. So in short, what I would, I've raised some areas that we may want to consider. That is basically from the NPA whether we do want to consider a general amendment to the Criminal Procedure Act on all sentences, which has its problems. Mr. Huynh from the State Law Advisors wanting to provide for sentences of imprisonment and fine. I think those are issues we may want to look at. I think we then need to look at the advice from the SC, from the NPA. But at this point, I would be supporting dropping 56A2, but looking quite seriously at putting in this cross reference to the CPA, Criminal Procedure Act, as requested by the Women's Legal Centre.
Okay. What?
Cross reference to 276?
Yeah.
Yes. It's basically impose a sentence. The wording at the moment is impose
a sentence which that court considers appropriate and which is within that court's penal jurisdiction. And theirs is impose a sentence as provided for in 276 of the CPA as amended.
Mr. Chair, I would agree with that submission. I also would not agree that 276 itself should be amended, because that forms a very strong part of the argument that section covers sentencing provisions where there might not be a specific penalty in other legislation, and it's relied quite heavily in the appeal documents. So I would strongly suggest that we do not amend 276, but we do insert a cross-reference to that section. It's a very important all-encompassing section in the Criminal Procedure Act. Thank you, Chair.
We're pretty much at it then, Chair, on both things. And shall we, but do we wish to hear Mr. Huynh?
I think we should.
Yes.
Let me hear you first. Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Huynh, take your seat here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to just give you the NPA's views. We do not support, and we are not proposing, an amendment of Section 276. What we are saying is that, in view of the fact that there is also other legislation that's got the same problem, maybe the committee can consider amending Section 276 to include a similar provision than what you've got in front of you at the moment in the bill. But then you'll see, we are saying there on page 3 of our submission, there are advantages, but there are also disadvantages. And the disadvantages are that we must, or the committee must, legislate for the man in the street. And you know, since 1994, there was a real effort to legislate in plain language and also to legislate for the man in the street. And we are saying that if you've got such a general provision that's in the bill, as well as a general provision that you may consider in 276, it's actually not advisable, because the man in the street then would not be aware of what the sentence would be. So there at the end of page 3 that we say, in view of the above, the NPA proposes that a penalty clause should be inserted in the Sexual Offences Act, and that such penalty clause should clearly prescribe the sentences that may be imposed in respect of the specific offences. So that is actually our proposal, and as I understood you correctly, that is also the proposal of the State Law Advisors. And we are saying that one should not have a provision somewhere else. If we look at other legislation, that is the, can I say, the modus operandi that this committee had always followed, And I think this is maybe the first one where the committee left it in the hands and in the discretion of the court, but within its jurisdiction. We obviously do not agree with the Prince's judgment, and I agree with, I think that there is a legal opinion. We agree with the reasons in that legal opinion, but in that legal opinion they are also saying that they do not agree that this provision is going to address the Prince's judgment, although I also do not agree with the reason they are providing there, because again they are quoting the Prince's judgment out of context. I am of the view that this provision in front of you will address the Prince's judgment, because of the fact that the committee goes further than the Fawley judgment, which is referred to, in that you specifically say within its jurisdiction discretion. In other words, in case of a district court, it will be 3 years. In case of a regional court, I think it's 10 years. So there are specific sentences prescribed. So I don't agree with that legal opinion there. But at the same time, the committee may also consider giving the magistrate's court a higher jurisdiction to include, in other words, that notwithstanding any other provision, a magistrate court may impose a higher sentence than its normal jurisdiction. I'll tell you why it's very important, because these cases are really not difficult cases, and my colleague can testify, can confirm that. It's not difficult to prove. So it's not necessary to prosecute these cases in the regional court or the high court. We can prosecute it in the district court, but then the district court must have the necessary jurisdiction to impose a higher sentence. So we support, or let me put it to you this way, we are of the view that the provision in front of the commission will remedy and will provide for a Prince judgment. But at the same time, we are of the view that it is better to insert a specific sentence for each of these offences.
Well, Mr. Nell, let me ask you this then. Given the fact that we are faced with time constraints, members of the NPA, as you probably know, here in the Western Cape, have asked the police to be circumspect and cautious when arresting and charging persons with any of these offences. How then do the police proceed? You see, that's the difficulty. It's easy to say, look, find a schedule and link that schedule to each of the offences. That's going to take time. We started that process last week, and immediately one of your colleagues in the MPA who sat here said, but you see, that particular sentence, if you go to the, did she say the Child Justice Act? A 14-year-old is faced with a sentence of 25 years imprisonment. And we were proposing a 10-year imprisonment for an adult. So you see, the exercise is not that simple. It needs time, Mr. Nell. It needs time for a thorough review of the Act, and we don't have that time. Mr. Jeffrey.
Yeah, just in following on from that, I mean, Mr. Nell wasn't here last time. I think everybody agrees it would be preferable to have a specific maximum penalty for each offence, each new statutory offence created. However, as the Chair has said, that is not something we can do overnight. One would have to look at what is already in other laws, and one would have to evaluate each offence and see how we rate it, its seriousness, because that's the purpose of doing it, is to give the court some guideline as to how serious does Parliament regard a particular offence. And we'd need to have public involvement, greater public involvement in that process. So we don't have time. If we're going to do that, we're not going to have a bill passed soon. And the Chair was saying that the Western Cape NPA had asked the police to be circumspect. I mean, my understanding is, in fact, that they have asked the police not to arrest,
which is
much which is more than being circumspect. It is basically that you commit a certain category of a sexual offence, or you're accused of doing that. The docket gets opened, but you're free to wander around and carry on as you did before. And that is the harm that we are trying to fill as soon as possible. Not for past cases, because we cannot make crimes retrospective, but for future, as of now, and we want it now. So that's why we've gone for the approach, and I think, Chair, that I think we would generally probably all be in agreement that it would be good to have specific offences for specific crimes, but we don't have the time to do that now if we're going to pass the bill this term without a proper public consultative process and so on. Therefore, we've gone for the general provision, which generally seems to be acceptable. Okay. And I suppose the EOP, so I don't think one needs to take it sort of any further.
Mr. Huan, I hope you are not going to be charged with explaining this memorandum of advice. Oh, okay, I thought it was an opinion. All right.
We were just asked to do our advice whether Clause 5 as proposed by the committee would be sufficient to address the findings of the court. The long and short is that we agree that it is sufficient. We just there is precedent in our statutes and the legal succession to the South African Transport Service Act in 1989. In Schedule 1 there is a similar provision, also not quite similar but in a similar vein is the implementation of the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court Act, where there's a similar provision. So we agree that this would actually cure the problem. The only thing is that we just issue the caveat that it shouldn't be done as a matter of course, that Parliament really should reflect the seriousness which Parliament views offences. But in this instance, we agree that this would be cure the problem.
Thank you. All right. Honourable members, then, are we in agreement that 56A2...
Sorry, just on the... I would suggest, though, that you do... I think it's...
Who?
Priya was going to talk on this opinion.
Mr. Dupree, are you here to justify the opinion?
I thought I was getting hand signals that he was... No, that's the
same. Is there anyone amongst you, Mr. Bassett, Mr. Dupree, that you want to speak to on this memorandum of advice?
Yeah, I'm going to ask Mr. Dupree to speak. You'll recall the committee requested us to get an opinion from counsel. Mm-hmm. So that's advice that we received from counsel. In addition, we approached both state law advisors and counsel. We've dealt with the law advisors, and this memorandum of advice is from counsel. That was made available, I think, yesterday. I don't know whether that... Okay.
All right. Mr. Dupree?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair, yes. We requested the Minister's Council to provide us with an opinion whether primarily clause the proposed new section 56A1 addresses the concern raised in Prince. Chair, I'm with your permission going to highlight only a few paragraphs for you. It would appear, if one reads the summary on page 16, that they indicate that subject to the qualification we make in paragraph 13 above, the proposed draft section 56A of the sexual offences does not address the High Court's concern. Unfortunately, when we requested counsel's advice, I think we phrased our question oddly to the extent, and that is what they indicate. They indicate in paragraph 9, in giving our advice, it is important to understand the parameters within which it is sought. It seems to us that our advice is sought on a narrow issue, which is this, does the proposed draft provision, section 56A, address the concerns raised by the High Court in the Prince case? the opinion as far as the proposed section 56A is concerned is actually just reflected in the first 8 pages thereof, and then they refer to it in the summary again on page 16. The remainder of the opinion they provide us with their provisional thoughts around the whole issue, the legality issue. And I may just, by proving that point, indicate to you that in paragraph 25 on page 11, and that's why I would tend to request the committee members to consider the remainder of the opinion provisional thoughts at this stage and not necessarily an indication of the full ambit within which the minister will join the appeal case. But just to provide you an example, and I would possibly like the committee to respond to that. On page 11, paragraph 25, the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, the 7th line from the top, the sentence starts with the word death. They've had this argument and then they come to this conclusion. Just an example, Chair. The only reasonable inference from this must be that it is an innocent omission and not a deliberate one by Parliament. So I would just like to point out that these are provisional thoughts, Chair. And we haven't had the opportunity to consult with counsel yet. Now, to return to the question that we have raised, Chair, the two important paragraphs to my mind are reflected on page 7, paragraphs 12 and 13. In paragraph 12, they say, in our view, the proposed draft provision does not address the findings by the court in the Prince judgment. The reason for our saying so is briefly this. The proposed draft provision confers discretion on a court to impose a sentence which that court considers appropriate and which is within the court's penal jurisdiction. But the High Court has criticized this approach, saying the notion that punishment should in each case be left at the discretion of the judge is indeed the antithesis of the nulla poena sine lege principle. Now, Chair, for me personally, the important paragraph is paragraph 13. That, in our view, is the end of the matter if the idea is to address the court's finding to the letter. However, as we argue below, the court has mischaracterized the nulla poena sine lege principle. It seems to us that, subject to what we have to say about subsection 2 of the proposed section 56, the wording of the section is not objectionable. For me, Mr. Chair, that is the bottom line. I wouldn't say that this is an opinion which, in an outright or forthwith manner, criticizes what is proposed by the committee at this stage.
All right, Mr. Swart.
I like the interpretation given to the opinion. It seems to justify our approach. I like what the opinion says in terms that how can it ever be said that it was the legislature's intention that sexual offences are not to be punishable? I think that's the essence of the whole debate. It was always the intention that sexual offences should be punishable. Otherwise, the result would be irrational, it would be absurd, and that would fly in the face of various principles of statutory interpretation. I like what this opinion says on page 32 in dealing with the Prince judgment. What we have here is the subversion of justice by a predilection for technical niceties and the fact that the Constitutional Court has cautioned against such an approach. So I think, Chair, this opinion endorses the approach that we are following to remedy the situation urgently and as a measure whilst the appeal court is dealing with this issue. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Jeffrey?
Chair, look, I think we're all on the same page. What I'd like is if there could be there seems to be, to the draft that we have before us at the moment, there seem to be two amendments that we are seriously considering moving. The one is the deletion of keeping 56.7 where it is in 56, and therefore deleting it from 56.8.2. And nobody's, you know, so whether anybody's got any problems with that. The other is the under the new 56A, this cross-reference to Section 276 of the Criminal Procedure Act, the Women's Legal Centre proposal. And so, Chair, I'd want to know, can we get a response on those two proposed amendments from the legal drafters, the state law advisers, the NPA particularly?
Mr. Bassett. Thank you, Chair. I think Mr. Dupuy is going to respond. I just want to draw the committee's attention to the bill that's before you now is a little bit different to the one that was tabled in the committee last week. The bill last week didn't refer to or didn't make provision for a court other than the court that convicted a person of the sexual offence to impose a sentence. But in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act, a court, it's not necessarily the court that convicted the person that always imposes a sentence. It could have been dealt with in a district court and submitted to a regional court for sentence, so we wanted to cater for that. So that's why this bill differs a weeny bit from last week's bill. Another court.
Mr. Dupree?
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Chair, we won't object to deleting, as instructed, subsection 2 from the proposed new section 56A. However, it's just a technical concern that we have. It is, if you look at section 56, it's a provision dealing with defences and sentencing. It's only subsection 7 that deals with sentencing. The other provisions of Section 56 deal with defences. If we have now a dedicated sentencing provision in our Act, then it simply makes sense, Mr. Chair, and I think the state law advisers will agree on a technical level as well to move that provision and to insert it in the provision dealing with sentencing. It's just a question of bunching things together that are supposed to be together.
And what is your response to the cross-referencing with Section 276 of the CPA?
Sorry, Mr. Chair. Yes, I don't think we'll have a problem with that. The cross-reference to that extent, I cannot see whether it will cause any potential harm, possibly just improve the draft.
Mr. Bassett?
I would agree with that. I think it really just takes it one step forward in terms of certainty and specifics.
Can you further assist Mr. Huan, or not necessary?
Thank you. I'm covered by my colleagues.
Mr. Jeffrey, followed by Ms. Schrader.
Yeah, look, I mean, looking, it's basically the... I mean, this is now to the other members of the committee, I think particularly Ms. Smuts who first raised it. 56A2 is the client's, sex worker's client's clause. So the opposition to it has come from, I think it's from SWET, it's from the Chuaranang Legal Advocacy Center for the same reason. I mean, looking at the Chuaranang Advocacy Legal Advocacy Center, you know, they say we don't support this clause and are unable to ascertain what harm it is that the section seeks to ameliorate. We wish to point out that engaging in sexual acts for financial gain, benefit, reward, compensation are already crimes, etc. We don't think that the elements of a crime can also be used as aggregating factors in sentencing of offenders. But the issue basically is that this section is already in the Sexual Offences Act. As Mr. Dupuy has said, it's in the existing Section 56, which reads defences and sentencing. We are putting in a 56A clause called sentencing. And so what they have done is taken out the rest of the old 56 is on defences. It's only 56.7 that relates to sentencing. So I hear what they're saying, and I think the opposition to it is an opposition to the clause wherever it is, rather than that it is in 56A2. So I think with that, I'd want to propose that we don't delete it.
Don't delete.
We keep it. We keep the amendment as it is, as proposed by the drafters. In that, number one, we want to do as little as possible to the Act. So it may be that the that sweat is correct and it's not a good clause, but we're not actually engaging on that terrain at the moment. We're fixing some other problem. So it stays in whatever happens, it would stay in the Act, whether it's in 56.7 or 56.8.2. If it's going to stay in the Act, then it makes sense that it moves from 56.7, a clause which was defences and sentencing, and now gets changed to just defences, and moves into the sentencing section. And that maybe in our report we can just specify that is what, it's not a new section, it is a section that's already existed, it's just been moved around for ease of reading. So seeing some other members, I think it was Ms. Smuts, proposed its deletion, I'd want to propose that we keep it where it is in the proposed amendment.
We therefore don't address the problem that the element or component of a crime cannot also be an aggravating circumstance for sentencing. I see the difficulty, however. I mean, what Hink is saying is simply clean up the logic. You can't have a clause saying defences and sentencing and then another clause saying sentencing. So it's a simple problem of logic. Really, the only argument is were the previous Justice Committee MPs wrong in doing this or not? But I would simply have to be sympathetic to the argument that we cannot now address that, as there are clearly other things in the Sexual Offences Act that require addressing. But perhaps the time when we hear from the Law Reform Commission on Prostitution is the time to address this. And presumably that is going to be another, what was it, 5 or 8 years you took on this law, previous members? There's going to be another 5-year legislative session.
So you agree that we must not delete?
Okay,
fair enough.
But Chair, maybe, I mean, I know that when the courts look at the legislature's intention for some reason, and I don't understand why, they don't look at debates and things like that.
Yeah.
But maybe in the report, just so that we should say this is why we have just moved it from a technical point of view. There were arguments against the clause, but we felt we were not in a position to consider whether the clause was right or
wrong. I'll accept. Chair, isn't there some rule against referring to debates for whatever reason?
No, in fact, the Constitutional Court says from this day we will be looking at
all
the
right
answer.
Yes, I know they said that on the Constitution itself.
No.
In general.
In general, yes. Mr. Dupree and then Mr. Bassett.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe I should just also highlight to the committee members that we have also prepared an objects memo for the committee. I don't know whether the committee members had the advantage of looking at that. We've forwarded that together with the document that we forwarded yesterday, Chair. And I would just like to highlight then in paragraph 2.2, Mr. Chair, that we state there clause 4 aims to affect consequential amendments to section 56 of the Act by amending the heading thereof and omitting subsection 7 from that section in order to insert that subsection in the proposed new section 56A of the Act.
Okay, fair enough. Okay. Mr. Bassett.
Thanks, Chair. I was also going to allude to that. The memorandum of advice also, the commentators seem to have it wrong, particularly in the memorandum of advice I picked it up about clause 56.8.2. I don't know whether they seem to think it's an insertion rather than just a twisting around or moving around. So I think they're looking at it possibly in that light rather than what the technicalities that we've gone through.
All right. Mr. Jeffrey?
In spite of it being in the objects clause, as Mr. Dupree has pointed out, I do think we should still make reference to it in the report, just given that nobody seems to be reading this clause properly where it's come from. But, Chair, then, maybe we can I mean, it then would seem that the draft bill before us, apart from the addition then of the cross-reference to Section 276, which is on, it's paragraph 1.5 of the Women's Legal Centre submission. Unfortunately, their pages aren't numbered. But it's basically impose a sentence and then the addition is provided for in Section 276 of the Criminal Procedure Act 51 of 1977. They've got as amended. I mean, usually we don't go and put as amended. So it would be Criminal Procedure Act 51 of 1997. And then the rest reads which the court considers appropriate and within that court's penal jurisdiction. That just simply get added and then the rest stays as it is.
Okay. Honourable members, are we agreed? Mr. Bassett.
Chair, just on the objects memo, we drafted the objects memo on a using a previous objects memo in terms of a committee bill, we don't have all the headings that we normally have with a normal bill, like financial implications, and maybe we've got I think headings that we normally have have not been used, but we drew on an example of a committee bill in the past.
I'm not sure what you're telling us now.
I'm just alerting.
Yes,
I think
we're alerted to that.
Provincial, you know, we normally have implications for provinces and something like that. So it's not in all respects exactly the same as the object memo that we normally deal with.
Okay, we acknowledge that. Financial implications, there are none. I'm not sure that there are.
There are financial implications. I mean, this bill is going to result in more people being arrested. That's why we're passing it. So.
All right. Mr. Swart.
Just the persons consulted, there are obviously those who consulted. NPA, for example.
Well, at the time that they drafted this, they hadn't consulted with anyone, except perhaps, I don't know, Advocate Ronnie de Kock and his team here in the Western Cape, perhaps. I don't know. It's up to you, honourable members, if you feel that should be listed there.
I mean, chair, it. This is the committee bill. It's not the department's bill, so they weren't meant to be consulting anyone. I mean, we asked them to do stuff, so I think it's sufficient as it stands at the moment. We called for unconsidered written submissions in respect of the bill. I actually really think these memoranda are a waste of time, actually.
No, I think they're
useful when a bill is introduced, but when they then have to amend the memoranda to reflect the amendments that the committee has made, I think that's where it all a waste of time. It's fine for an introduced bill from a department to explain it. It's good, but not trying to then cover the work that we've done. But Chair, I would want to suggest then maybe I think we'll have to suspend. We're passing the bill on Thursday. I think we've got to suspend the 3-day rule anyway.
And passing the bill on Thursday.
Yeah.
In the NNA.
That we adopt the bill.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I thought there wasn't going to be. I mean, because we're all in agreement. What I wanted to suggest was that we approve the bill now, but that the report we do tomorrow, just to give a little bit more time, because seeing we had agreed there wouldn't be a debate, and I think the purpose of the debate was simply to state what is everybody agrees with, that could go into the report.
Yeah.
And therefore, we might want to take a bit more time on the report, and there's less urgency. The 3-day rule is for the bill itself, not for the report, and that we adopt that tomorrow.
Can we proceed on that basis? All right. I'm putting the bill, and as amended, because the cross-reference to Section 276, Mr. Dupree and Mr. Huon, if you both of you could just look at Women's Legal Centre's draft and whether that suffices for us.
Chair, it would be just deleting, if from their draft, deleting as amended.
As amended.
Yeah.
Are we agreed, honourable members?
Agreed.
Right. In that case, then, I'm not going to put each clause to you. Is it okay with you if I put it to you as amended?
Only today.
Only today. All right. All right. Anyone objects? No one objects? All in agreement? Thank you very much. Lovely. Okay. Mr. Wuern, thank you very much. We appreciate your presence and your input. Thank you. All right, we'll now move on to judicial matters. Honourable members.
Yes, yes, it has. There was another one. There was another.
Yeah, judicial matters is the bill that we are amending, we're deleting prior.
So what do you want them to stay, JJ? As a result. No, me too. Take this one. You'd need the bill. Memorandum. It will be. Yeah, it will be.
Yes, just writing the song.
Sure, no problem. We'll wait. Yes, we'll wait. We didn't think we'd finish this. You can just look at that, Christine, and you know, because if you don't have the context in the background, then it's sort of lost. Okay. Honourable members, maybe we'll have a break. We're just waiting for Mr. Robertson. He didn't think we'd finish as soon as we did. So let's have a tea break. Thank you.
How are you?
I'm fine.
Okay.
I'm fine in Europe.
No, I think
have a coffee.
Something.
Yes.
Imprisonment, periodical imprisonment.
Maar
die essentiële punt is nog steeds wat ons bevestig die feit.
Kan ek dit sê? Baie, want ek is baie wat my bietjie lang is.
Okay.
As jy sê, dis is 'n kruisverwysing, want dit maak reeds voorsiening vir die tronkstraf en al daai. Beteken dit, soos wat julle nou wil doen met die wet, met die draft, met die nuwe wysiging, julle wil ons nou, daar is gesê dat nie sentences opgelê, of daar word nie provision gemaakt vir punishment van sexual offences. Is dit, beteken dit, amper soos dit ondervang dit?
Ja, dit is die tweede punt. Wat ons doen is, ons bevestig die bestaande. En hy oefen sy discretie uit binne sy jurisdiksie.
Dit is reeds in.
Nee, ons bevestig dit nou. Ons skryf dit nou uit in 'n statuut. Dit is die Suid-Afrikaanse reg. Die Weskaapse Hooggeregshof het iets anders gesê. Ons bevestig maar net die bestaande feit in ons reg, dat die hof diskresie het, waar 'n vonnis nie spesifiek voorgeskryf word. Dis nou in 'n statuut, in 'n wet. En hy oefen daardie diskresie, dis daai een. Binnen sy jurisdiksie. Dan word 'n magistraat hof kan net soveel daai geargumenteer, kan net soveel jaar op.
Ja, dis 'n verskil van hof.
Dit is wat ons doen. En nou is dit net 'n klein
extra. Dit is basically maar die krag van die hele
vandag net, ja, dit is die hele krag. Vandag 'n extra punt bygesit. Op grond van die submissies wat ons gekry het. Ons maak 'n kruisverwysing. Wat is CPI in Afrikaans? Strafrecht.
Strafproces.
Ja, CPI. Seksie 2. wat reeds wel en dat is dat tjit
Dus wat ik al achtergekomen ben met die enige serie van de NPI, is dat hulle stel basis voor dat het elke offense moet, weet, het moet individueel gevat worden met sy
dus ek zou sê, dit is een ideaal, maar ons gaan nie in hierdie omstandighede,
ja, want het is
in hierdie tyd gaan oor, ja. So, it wouldn't be the proper application of our mind as legislators. En dan moet jy elk een van die misdrijven.
Yeah.
Jy moet nou rechtig, you really have to apply your mind. Wat is die correcte? Is het 10 jaar straf? Is het 5 jaar? Wat is die? En ek denk in hierdie omstandighede, is dit nie recht nie? Maar tweedens, dit is in elk geval een principe. Maar ek stem saam met hom, en vooral sy argument dat dit is waar Suid-Afrikaners lees die sy hulle eie wette, ek stem saam met jou, en dit is in enige ander omstandighede ideaal om die specifieke,
maar dit die argument dat hierdie kan vinniger neem as die ander ene. Ek neem,
sy gedagte is, nie, dit beteken nie, ek kan dit soos een machine deursit nie, ek is een wetgever. We have to apply in our minds, so I'm very serious about it.
Ja, but how does that, how do you distinguish that from other pieces of it?
No sir, I'm sorry, we don't here legislate ever, just on the basis of what somebody else has done. It would not be properly executing our duty.
No, I understand what you're saying, but it's not going to be swift the process.
It is, because believe me, this is done. Môre is hy klaar, donderdag sit ons om weer. En om jou route te vat, praat van weke. En het is ook nie korrek om het te doen sonder inset van die publiek. We legislate, we hear the public, then we apply our own mind. No, but let's just leave that point now, right? Was it that your essential point?
Yeah.
Okay. So this book you read over, that you know that it's something
that
you know. It is crazy, but we're going to the extra point of that by this, and the right of advising that it was reeds in the study, that mense wat gevonnis word, straffe opgelê kan word, wat trek van...
Ek sien dit is 'n verklaring uit 'n gewoonte misdadiger
So dis die essensie. Dan het ons dit onbespreek gehad oor die ander ding van die komponent van wat betrek ook 'n verswarende deel van die straf.
Ja, maar daar is ons
besluit. Maar daar is ons besluit om dan maar vir eerst te los.
Okay.
Ek ook meer aan.
Dank je, Frits.
Ek weet nie wat die oorgestaan is, ek in die herhaling, ek is makkelijk.
We're talking about the long resource thing.
No, I don't know. I'm asking you. I don't know.
For more than one pot of coffee. I mean, it's Bonani. There's still only one pot of coffee for the entire Jazz Committee, and all is good.
No, no. For this, you know, student, it was not really.
People steal our coffee, and if they only have one pot, then
that's right.
We never had any. from our part.
How are you, ma'am?
I'm well. Are you speaking good
Afrikaans? No.
Where did you learn Afrikaans?
It's my mother tongue.
Oh.
No.
Yeah. Okay.
My mother tongue. My first language and English. Yeah. Wow. Second language.
You get 45 years here. Can you speak Lang and Hoven?
Oh, Langen was
the answer of Funny Park.
Oh, that's the poem, eh?
Yeah, he was a lawyer, but at the same time was a philosopher, because his articles were very critical. Yeah, a lot of articles were, it was at the height of 1974, it was 1976, because of the political style,
he
didn't care when people are saying away from Africa.
I do think it's a beautiful
one. There is an article he writes, he says, about the word Nel in Africa.
Nel.
Yeah. Meaning Nel.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Nel. He says, that is a cluster than Dardi Nel. Kukum kan Nel snacks, yes. Of on snacks, yes. That's why he is Nel. Maru, yes. Nel. Yes. Nel.
Yeah. Chubert.
It's
getting better and better. All right, let's move on to more important things, judicial matters. Mr. Bassett.
Some amendments were distributed, and Mr. Roberts will take you through them. Just on clause 10, there still seems to be uncertainty. I made inquiries about what the situation is about clause 10. Unfortunately, I couldn't find any memorandum or anything that has been spoken about, and nobody in the department that I spoke to in the ministry, I couldn't get any information on that. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. Just to recap, previously the department were requested to meet with National Treasury in order to insert a clause in the Act that deals with the discretionary power of the SIU to charge fees and expenses in terms of investigation. The department came up with a new subsection that is being inserted in Section 5.1 of the Act as amended by Clause 4, and this amendment mainly provides therefore that a state institution who cannot afford to pay the fees will apply to National Treasury to consider the matter. National Treasury will then in consultation with the head of the SIU consider the financial position of a state institution and then make a finding as to whether the state institution is in a position to pay the fees or legal expenses or other charges that is charged by the SIU. We made a small amendment to the initial document that was distributed last week. That is in on page 1 of the document. Under 1A. After the Treasury, we inserted as contemplated in the Public Finance Management Act. I believe there was a concern raised last time whether municipalities will resort under a Treasury, national or provincial. Well, if you look at the Public Finance Management Act, I believe it's Chapter 3, makes provision for a provincial treasury that is being established. It's in terms of Section 17. And in terms of the Public Finance Management Act, they will have certain powers in relation to local government. But municipalities, the financial or budgetary implications thereof is actually regulated by the Municipal Finance Management Act. This act exists in addition to the Public Finance Management Act, and it imposes certain obligations on the National Treasury as well as the Provincial Treasury to monitor the budget of municipalities. I can refer to Section 77(1)(b) of the Public Finance Management Act, which provide that monthly statements of municipalities must be submitted to the provincial treasury, which in turn must submit consolidated statements once a month also to national treasury, and also Section 22(b)(1) of the Municipal Finance Management Act, which provides that the municipalities must submit their annual budgets to national treasury. So there's a kind of concurrent control by national treasury as well as provincial treasury over the budgets of municipalities. Okay, and then on the next page, we renumbered clause 4. The paragraphs are just renumbered. B becoming C, C becoming D, and D becoming E. Okay, clause 10 relates to the appointment of financial investigators. The department wanted to propose an amendment to the bill. The first one relates to section 43(b)(3) of the Act. In that subsection, we refer only to financial analysts. And obviously, if you read the four mentioned sections where both financial investigators and financial analysts is continue to be employed, they should be included in subsection 3, which sets out the powers and functions of the people that will be employed in that capacity. In subsection 4 of section 40, the proposed section 43(b), the department wants to propose that the word investigator be taken out, so that if new personnel is appointed, they will only be appointed as financial analysts. I believe that is an administrative decision that was made within the NPA, that new people will not be appointed anymore as financial investigators, but only as financial analysts. Well, they will basically have the same powers as a financial investigator, but that is just a job a description.
On this point.
Yeah, and then what is the point, why are we then putting, replacing analysts with investigators in 3, line 10? That's what's at the moment. So we've got investigators now, and you want to, and for future staff, there won't be.
Thank you, Mr. Jefferson.
Okay. Is that it? Well, all right. Questions and comments, honorable members? The Honourable Pilani Majake, followed by Mrs. Swart.
The
Thank you, Chair. I just need to have clarity in terms of the provisions of the Public Finance and Management Act in terms of reporting to Treasury nationally and provincially. And then you made mention of the discussion we had around municipalities. And then you came back to Section 77(1)(b) of the Public Finance and Management Act. I don't quite clearly get it as to how, in a practical sense, the municipalities are really going to actually be dealing with Treasury and maybe be made to account. I just need clarity in that regard.
All right, let me hear your response.
On that point?
Okay.
Look, I mean, my understanding is that local government is a separate sphere. Mm-hmm. So there's not control, or local government finances don't go through provincial treasuries. There is provision in the constitution for monitoring by provincial government, but it's not it's not subservient. The issue, I think, the appropriate body would be national treasury, because national treasury allocates. I mean, local government can raise funds through rates and taxes, but a lot of the smaller municipalities, who would probably be the municipalities unable to pay for these investigations, would be getting money from national through the equitable share. So I don't think, so that's my understanding of it, and just a comment on that. I mean, basically what we wanted to provide for was a situation where the SIU doesn't go and charge a local authority for money and they can't pay, and then they can't put any money into capital expenditure because they're paying off this debt to the SIU. So it would be presumably a consultation with I would have thought, National Treasury. It could be really either that they should be exempted, but maybe it's not clear the national provincial relationship, because the equitable share is coming from national.
Like Mr. Jeffries said, like Mr. Jeffries said, there is a kind of concurrent, both the national and provincial treasury actually regulate the budgetary finances of certain local governments. There has been provided for that in Chapter 3 of the Public Finance Management Act, and also the other sections I quoted, Section 77(1)(b), where the expenditure of a municipality, the budgetary expenditure, must be brought to the attention of a provincial treasury as a start. So they will know the financial position of a municipality at that stage. But in terms of the Municipal Finance Management Act, that must also be submitted to National Treasury. So, in general, I suppose if a municipality is investigated by the investigating unit, they can approach either provincial or national treasury. Provincial treasury will be in a position to tell what is the state, the budgetary state of a municipality at that stage when the investigation is being instituted. If they come to the conclusion that the municipality will not be in a position to pay, obviously then the SIU cannot charge any funds in that regard. Like I said, I believe it's brought to the attention of the National Treasury once a month also through financial statements that must be submitted to National Treasury. So National Treasury will also be in a position to make a finding in this regard. But I think since it's local government, the best treasury to be approached is probably the provincial treasury.
Comrade Jenna. You okay with that?
I'm okay with it, Chair, though I'm just wondering whether it shouldn't be clearly written, or we should just take it. It's self-explanatory.
Mm.
So that it doesn't actually pose future problems.
Chairperson, we did consult with Treasury on this aspect as well, and I believe our initial drafts were to the effect where we broke it down that National Treasury will be the responsible person to approach if it's something like a constitutional institution, a public entity, or a national government. And but the big problem is that you get public enterprises that also function at local level. So it will be problematic to give a clear delineation which treasury must be approached. And the best we can come up with is something like a quite a vague description.
All right. Where to now, honourable members? Mr. Jeffrey?
Well, I think we basketball. We're on a roll.
We done?
Oh yeah, I just wanted to say, Chair, on clause 10, no, well, I mean, gee, we've passed four bills in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I just wanted to raise that look, with the NPA, I mean, I don't know if Mr. Nell knows anything or not, to encourage him, but the issue was that Advocate Jeeba had not formally, but orally, had raised some concerns with Clause 10, had indicated that she'd written to the minister, and we have been giving the opportunity to hear what the concerns are and whether there are amendments. It's been 2 or 3 weeks, I think, longer. Chair, I don't think we've got nothing. We've got nothing at all. I think if the NPA want to make any amendment to that clause, then they must make it in the NCOP. So I just wanted to put that it's not, it doesn't mean the door is entirely slammed shut. It's, but you know, we're not being formally told anything, and this was the bill that was approved by Cabinet. So if the NPA want to make any amendments, we propose that you make it in the NCOP.
All right. That said,
and just on the issue of specifying, I mean, look, it's National Treasury or, where applicable, a relevant provincial treasury. You know, remember that we're putting this section in to before the if it weren't for this section, SIU could just somehow go and charge. And that's what we wanted to avoid. I don't think we can make it any tighter because of the problems of what falls under national, what falls under provincial. I would have thought that both provincial and national should be consulted around charging a local authority, because the provincial is responsible for the monitoring, more closely responsible for the monitoring of that local authority. But if there's going to be any bailout, it's going to come from national. So I don't think one can be any, I don't think one can go further than the way it is at the moment, which is National Treasury or, where applicable, the relevant provincial treasury. And I'd urge that we support that. And then, Chair, yeah, otherwise I think we should approve the bill.
All right. Do you want me to go through it clause by clause, or?
Ms. Smut said last time that was only for the last time, so I think she wants you to go through it clause by clause.
All right. Clause 1. All in favour? Agreed. Clause 2. Clause 3. Clause 4 as amended. Yes, clause 4 as amended, because that's what Mr. Roberts has just been taking us through now. Okay?
Chair, that's the inclusion of 1A and, well, clause 1A. And then it is also the typographical ones on line 39 and line 46 and line 54.
Yes.
Okay, so it's both sets of amendments.
Yes.
Okay. Does Ms. Butts agree, Chair?
Yes.
All right.
Sure, just can I, through you, Chair, ask her, this one on the line 54, omitting D and substituting E, are you sure on that?
All right. All right. Clause 5, honourable members. It's very tentative.
Yes.
Yes. All right. Clause 6.
Yes.
Yeah.
clause 7.
Yes.
Clause 8.
Yes.
Clause 9.
No. Yes.
All right. Clause 10 as amended.
Yes.
Clause 11, which is a short title.
Yes.
And what else is there, Bonani? The long title I put to you. Agreed. Yes. And what else is there, Bonani? What else am I supposed to put to the committee? The objects. I put the whole bill to you.
Agreed.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Jeffrey is right. We're on a roll. Well done.
Procedurally, I mean, do we have any committee report? I don't really think there's much to say apart from that we approve the bill with amendments. But I mean, to ask that you check that. And then the other would be, is the do parties want to debate? This is not next week, the week after.
We can't make a habit of not debating. It's
no,
wrong.
That's not
it's
what he's saying.
Yeah. No, that's my response to what he's saying. You simply ask the question.
All right.
My response is whether we want to or not, we ought.
If there is a debate, members are not allowed to read simply sections of the bill, like the objectives. They've got to say something relevant to it.
Has any member of this committee ever done such a thing? Huh?
All right. I knew this was going to happen. All right. There'll be a debate.
Chair,
be a report.
Chair, just on reflection, that's the day we will be taking three bills through the House, not so.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
So, well, we've got sheriffs and
yes.
This one and trafficking. I mean, obviously with trafficking we need a debate.
Yeah.
Yes. I would suggest quite short, in other words, declarations of vote on these. But you must tell the folk arbeiter and the folk sitting in the, we really must say we've now made cost recovery possible, we've adjusted locus, blah blah blah. It's wrong not to, and do it by declaration is fine.
Okay.
And then give the big debate to trafficking.
Yeah. Fair enough. Okay. Mr. Bassett.
Chair, just confirmation, we're sitting tomorrow on trafficking, I understand. Yes.
Yes, we're sitting tomorrow on trafficking in S26. Well, it's 11:35. We have an appointment with the Iraqis.
What?
Yes.
Yes.
You agreed. I've got witnesses, yeah? You agreed? No. You agreed we'd meet with the Iraqis.
Really?
Yes, we did. At what time did you say? Well, I don't know what time you said. All I know is the committee agreed we'd meet with the Iraqis. We said a lunchtime meeting because we didn't want their arrival here to interfere with our work. You know, there was that concern that their arrival would now.
You buy me lunch any day.
I know that.
You owe us all a committee lunch.
I concede that. And, you
and I've got a proposal for you in that regard.
The media have left, Ms. Smuts.
Well, that's why I'm talking the way I'm talking.
Okay, yes.
Yeah.
And your proposal?
I've got a. No, I'm going to give it to you privately.
Ah,
very
okay.
Nice proposal.
All right, fine. Good enough.
Yeah, where are we meeting the Iraqis?
Here.
514.
Or 514.
And will there be some refreshments?
Yeah.
Please.
Because Chair, having
lunch? I thought you meant lunch.
Commissioner, not allowed to buy lunch. You know. I don't buy lunch anymore.
Then in future, you tell international relations, we said, they better provide proper refreshments. I got a feeling that this will be our last meeting with someone from overseas anyway. Mr. Jeffrey.
Just having spent some time with the Iraqis, I don't know if it's going to be any of the same people, but they are an interesting parliament. They are quite an activist parliament. I mean, they've basically got three, you've got Shiite, Sunnis and Kurds.
Yep.
And they're all quite conflictual with each other. They've got a requirement for minimum representation of 25% women, which interestingly the Shiites, who are more religious, have the highest representation of women. But they seem to be quite an activist parliament, although it's still, I mean, Baghdad is unsafe. A number of the people, I mean, seem to have the Sunnis particularly seem to have their families staying in Kurdistan because it's safer.
Well, I want to see you at 1 o'clock.
1 o'clock.
2514.